What is up, everyone? Welcome to another edition and a wonderful episode of Teddy. Usually it's you. Just like last week, I told you to fuck off. Binks, it's your turn. What can we not stop doing at this wonderful show?
We can't stop snapping, man. We can't stop snapping. You're in an F word in the first 5 seconds. You made it.
I'm allowed
dude.
One per episode, and I had to do it then.
Starting off hot, Binks. Great to have you on.
Yeah, dude. Super happy to be here. Thanks for the invite, gentlemen.
It is a wild time in Snap. We came off a big OTA, rolling into a big patch, and we have a high-profile card releasing. Got a lot to talk about today.
Yes, so we have, of course, the patch. We have last week's OTA to kind of go over. I guess that's where we should probably start, is the OTA, which was one of the larger ones we've had in quite a while. Bunch of different changes, but rather than go through the entirety of it, what were you guys most excited about? What cards have you been playing around with? Like, is there any deck from the OTA that you're like, oh, this is way better? For me, it's been Spectrum, definitely. So, Binks, we'll start with you. What have you been enjoying out of that last OTA?
Yeah, Spectrum, man. Spectrum getting 2 points of power. I was expecting one whenever it would get buffed, but going straight to two is big. I mean, two power in Marvel Snap is a lot more than a lot of people give it credit for. Which I think is really important. Spectrum just feels really strong on her own lane, just adding seven power and just like kind of pushing that lane so that you can kind of like have one lane where you fill with ongoing cards. You push Spectrum into one lane to win it, and then the one with full of ongoing cards can win. Feels a lot better. Funnily enough, because ongoing Thanos has been around, I've been throwing Scroll in a lot of decks, and Scroll feels really strong right now.
So if you good. Do,
like, a dinosaur and a blue Marvel, like, bye-bye, yep. Thanos. Like, get out of here.
Or the Snipe Prof X out of the Scroll are crazy.
Oh, yeah, super fun. But, yeah, I think that Spectrum is probably my favorite. And I just like that, Elsa was, like, tier S++++ card. Now it's just, like, a probably still top five card, but right around top five. And it's just back in power level. So Elsa's not a put it in every single deck card anymore, which I think is good.
Yeah, man, that looking ahead to Shaw with Spectrum, ooh, that's going to pop.
Shaw's just a really powerful card in general. I'm going to predict early that I think Shaw definitely gets adjusted a teeny bit before release, probably to plus one.
Oh, wow.
Which one's Shaw again? I'm sorry.
Shaw's the next season pass for December. He's a 3-3 according to the data mines, and says anytime he permanently gains a power increase wherever he is, hand, deck, or field, so like Okoye, Nakia, Nova exploding, he gains an additional plus two.
Ah, very interesting. A cool Surfer Spectrum card, maybe? Hand buff kind of card? Yeah, actually, I do remember seeing that one. Seems fun. Seems like a fun card. I think that's, when I was looking at the demo, it's like the only card that says like wherever it is. Thanos might say it too, but really cool to see like some in-deck and in-hand interactions happening.
Yeah, because of the stuff like Okoye and Nikia have kind of fallen by the wayside. But for me, post-OTA, the deck has still been Thanos. It's still so good, even with Elsa coming down a step. Just because, like, Elsa wasn't nerfed, yes, but she was in every deck that I was competing against. And so it just nerfed everybody the same, and I still play it. I still feel like it has advantages, and it's this Super Scroll adaptation. I'm putting that in my Thanos as well for the Mirror Match Buster.
Hell yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
I mean, Elsa's still really good. Like, when they changed her initially down to plus two, I was like, yeah, that's what she should have been off rip, right?
Yeah, and pretty much.
I was expecting her not only to get plus two, but like go down to a 2-0. That's what I was expecting.
Ooh.
And I thought she'd still be playable even then. Like that plus two, the synergy with things like Nightcrawler, Vision, Jeff, being in, I guess, Space Stone to another example, because she's great in Thanos decks, like you alluded to, Teddy.
Right.
Those interactions are already so nice, where you can turn a detriment to success when it comes to your Thanos deck. Because, of course, the stones represent typically a problem of board space and kind of really having to think through your plays and, like, not just want to throw out all your stones unless you're playing the destroy variation, just not caring. And Elsa's able to kind of really flip that on its head. So, I think she would still be good as a 2-0.
Maybe she'll go to, like, a 3-3 or a 3-4 in the future. I would kind of like to see her bump up a little bit in energy, because it just it feels like there's so many good 2-drops right now. Like, just put six of them in your deck, call it a day, you know?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you could play a deck of almost straight 2-drops right now and be pretty happy.
You'd be fine, yeah.
I think you would be, as long as you got draw in there. Man.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing I want to see, we talked about this a little bit last week, but Binks, I need your opinion on this, because I'm sure you've probably seen this floated around as a, like an idea for a buff. Electra, 2-2, snipe a 2-drop. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Electra is just... it's a card that doesn't really exist, right? Because, like, why would you run that instead of Killmonger? Sometimes some fringe bounce lists when there's a lot of weird, like, single one drops have kind of seen it happen. But Electra just doesn't really have an identity, and she's a really cool character. So, yeah, being able to assassinate a bigger card or something like that, be it a 2-drop, 3-drop, something like that, I would love to see. I think that would make the card a lot more interesting. And something that could just snipe 2-drops, I think, would be really cool. So, yeah, I would love to see something like that.
I guess before we go on to the actual big meat and potatoes, just for those of you who missed out on what the patch was, or the OT, I should say, real quick, we already alluded to it. Elsa going down to +2 instead of +3. Loki changed to a 4-5 instead of a 3-5, but we'll talk about Loki in a little bit because I think he might be the biggest winner of this new patch today.
Oh, yeah.
We got Collector going back to being a 2-2. Angela down, back up to a 2-2 yet again, but only +1 every time something procs her. Sauron down to a 3-2, in which they alluded that there's tools in place to change him or something like that for Sauron fans. Can I ask you guys what you interpreted that as when they said that in the patch?
Yeah, I took it as he's going to get a new toy of something. I'm not sure what it is because I don't think it's been on the horizon yet, but they must be designing someone with great stat line, bad ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the only thing I can expect. Also, Sauron has sneakily been, I think, one of the best when played cards for a very, very long time. It's one of those cards that, like, no one has a problem with, but has, like, been, like, if you look at the statistics, like, a very, very good card to have in your deck and the star of, like, every deck he's ever in. So I think it's worthwhile to do things like that. I feel like the balance team is much smarter in the community. Like, do you remember when everyone was so mad about the Soulstone nerf? Remember how everyone was like, oh my gosh, why would you ever nerf Thanos? Now Thanos guess who's a tier one deck with after the nerf?
Still Thanos.
You know, they know a little bit better than us, I feel like, most of the time. They have all the data.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have Watu going up to a 1-2 when they were saying, we're very careful about these changes. And I saw some people say, well, why was it a 1-1 in the first place? This is so bad. It's like, because this change is not for you. It's a little bit for you. They alluded to that for the most part. They're like, we don't want to mess up early pool, early series play for those kind of players, which is why you're likely to not ever see Captain America or Punisher get a significant buff to where they're competitively playable. Because they need recognizable cards for early players that work as that. They mentioned Namor as that earlier today. So Watu is still bad. That's okay. But we got Hellcow as a 4-8. Binks, have you cooked up some any Hellcow decks ever since this change?
I think the card still sucks. There's too many consistent discard cards now to even almost ever want Hell. Like, why would you play that ever? In some decks, maybe like a hyper, like Wong style discard list where you're trying to get like huge collectors and huge Morbiuses, it'll probably be fun. But like, if you're trying to be competitive, I just don't think you ever run a card like Hellcow on your list. Like, either want to get rid of your whole hand like MODOK, or you want to target very specific cards, which we now have Blade, which is wonderful now in that tech, and things like Lady Sif and Colleen Wing to target specific cards that you want. So like, even like 4-8, maybe in some weird Zabu, like, burst your hand at the end of the game, maybe in a strong guy deck, I don't know. That just makes it a game.
Make strong guy
too. No, not the strong guy. If strong guy gets +2 as well, then maybe, as it is. The problem. He has this problem of he can't, what is it? Is it Swarm or Apoc that he can't hit with, like, both?
Yeah, if it's just Apoc in your hand, it'll only hit it once, yeah.
Yeah, like, if that got changed, then the Wong deck might have some room to really jump people, but without it, like, the stat line is incredible, right? But you can just as easily cut your best cards as help yourself.
Yeah, I'll probably try a deck like that, but if you want to be competitive, it's crazy that a 2-power buff just makes the card, you're just like, nah, I don't know. This card was a 2-6, though.
Could we have gone back to the 2-6?
I don't think so. That was wild. I don't know. I mean, it's like weird to think about like OG stuff and
3-6 into the modern Sarah Surfer. Let's go.
Yeah.
Once you start getting into those stat lines, wouldn't you like maybe start seeing this card as like a zero target now in like Shuri decks?
Yeah. Hey, let's go. And then the Spectrum that we were heralding, the 6-7 now, still with that plus 2 ability, making her way more punchy, hoping for some of those other very early 6 costs to get a little facelift. I've been really rooting for Heimdall to go down in cost, which would be amazing, him coming as a 5. And then I guess what are the others that are down there? It's the Onslaught. That's your other pool 1-6 drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And Apocalypse, but I think Apocalypse is kind of fine at 4.
I think Apoc 6-8. Is fine. I would love to see Onslaught. I don't know. Does he
I
need
call
to
these
be
like boss cards, right? Like yeah. a lot of things. It's like the like Spectrum's like Spectrum and Onslaught are like the bosses of the ongoing decks. We can either get a bunch of ongoings or buff them all. I mean, we saw like Blue Marvel used to be the quote unquote boss card of like the Zoo deck. Mm-hmm. Blue Marvel going to a 5-3 turns it from like a card that was unplayably bad to like a really fun, interesting card that no one like hates, which is good. Yeah. That's what's a shame for everything with.
Yeah.
Would you put 5-7 for like Heimdall?
I think so. Just something that like can shuffle them and then you still can be reactive on the final turn, or maybe combo it with a 1 cost, which Move has a couple of right now, I think could just be so much more interesting for that
Ghost
deck.
Spider Heimdall or something to finish. Yeah. Yes. I actually really like that. I haven't thought of it because like you think about it going to 6-9 and then it's kind of like, you know, as always vulnerable to Shang-Chi. So maybe you'd say like 6-10, but like, is that really pushing it? But 5-7 is very interesting because it makes it so your last move isn't as concrete, right? You smash everything over to the left and then like, oh, do I have Ghost Spider? Do I have Doctor Strange? How am I going to pull things over?
Yeah, then that end game Doctor Strange alongside another card looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's the OTA. Any last thoughts on any of these cards? Anything you're excited about moving forward with any of these?
Even before this patch that we're going to talk about, I think the Loki deck is still just really good. Like, yeah. I feel like moving Loki 1 extra energy, but then giving Collector plus 2 at the same time, kind of nearly nullifies what happens at the deck. Obviously, like, you know, 1 extra energy on Loki can feel really bad when you're trying to squeeze certain things in with him, but if you're aiming to play him on the turn 5 or just, like, turn 4, like, it's kind of just fine. So I think that Loki is going to be very scary, and I'm excited. I think I'm playing... I'm going to try start just playing some, like, pure Loki stuff because it just seems like it's going to be the deck that kind of pops off.
Especially with some of these changes on the horizon.
Well, let's get started
with
these
Brad.
Changes.
Here we go.
So, first things first, we got Glenn here. He's telling us about why these changes are occurring. First one is Mobius, the man, the myth, the legend himself that everyone either loves or hates. I guess a lot of people hate him. He used to be a 2-3 ongoing. Increase your opponent's or stuff or whatever. Yours can't be increased. Theirs can be increased or decreased. Apologize. And now he's no longer an ongoing. He is an on reveal of the same stat line. And he does the same thing, but just for a turn. How do you guys feel about this one?
Unplayable garbage.
Oh, it's so different.
Put it in the
now.
Dumpster.
Like, you could try and play around with Wave maybe a little bit, who's also getting changed, which is then going to be like this wild thread of theory crafting. But yeah, it's...
Wasn't getting changed, then maybe there's a chance that this card still sees play on 5 with Wave.
But yeah, now it's my like... initial reaction. When I saw this, I was like, ooh, that really sucks. But I'm like, well, I guess you can still have that, you know, back pocket plan B of like, can't let them do that, and then just go Wave Mobius on 5, and you're like, okay, cool. He still fills that kind of niche, but no.
Right.
No, he doesn't.
Let me ask you guys this, because I have a lot of... so many opinions on Mobius. Did you think that it needed a change? And if it was, what was your idea of how to change him?
I was just going to take power off of him, honestly, if you wanted to change him. But I was pretty okay with him just reorienting the meta away from all the energy cheats. We'd had energy cheats for, you know, the last year of seasons.
It is a card game. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I understood them, like, wanting to push back on that. And, like, they see all the other card games just become... Marvel play the cheapest cards, and that's not the game. So it's like, okay, he's just going to be that counter. And then I was even seeing him being played less and less, and like I had cut him personally from my Thanos deck. I was just like, I'll take the Loki as a poor matchup. So I thought that he was improving the meta state from being one-dimensional around the energy cheats, even without super high presence himself.
I don't know how you change him. Because, like, I get this one. Really this hard. One makes sense to me. Like, this is probably, like, one of the easier ways to go about it. And I think he can still have a place. Very niche, though, and it's like, he's going to be, like, the equivalent of Echo, essentially, where it's, like, certain metas, you might need to pack him in and bring him to a match or whatever. But for the most part, I do agree with Binks. He's kind of bad now, and that makes me kind of sad.
Honestly, like, making it so that he would have only hit a specific turn, kind of like Daredevil. Like, maybe he activated only for turn 6 or only for
turn... That's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Or maybe not for turn 6. Like, the whole game, but not turn 6, or nothing, and then he would activate for turn 6, which honestly is, like, about even power level if he either only hits the final turn or hits everything but the final turn.
I really like that idea. I think that's really cool to, like, set some level, because... I hate Mobius. I hated that he was a 2/3 because there's no cost to adding him into your deck. It's a 2/3. There's no it's such an easy and free, I consider it, there's no cost to playing him. It's a free basically card to add to your deck if anything that's energy cheating is annoying you, right?
Yeah.
So like I had the same thing. I wanted to go to 2/1 or 3/3. Those are the 2 points. I think that it's enough cost for certain decks where it's like, I hate this matchup, I need this tech card, would have him, but it's not just like a, hey, Loki's pretty popular, I'm just going to have Mobius in all of my decks.
Exactly.
Because why wouldn't I? I would be stupid not to.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing with Mobius for me is that, like, as a deck builder, especially as a content creating deck builder, so this is jaded and pushed towards what I want to do, it's just like, how do I run a Mr. Negative deck right now? You know, like,
you
how do I play a Stature deck? How do I play Sabretooth in a deck? Like, how do we do all of these things?
Exactly.
I don't.
Death,
yeah.
Death, Sabretooth got cut. Like, Mobius was supposed to stop Loki, but really what he did is he murdered Zabu, Death, and Sabretooth, which are all, like, more interesting things that people were okay with. Or Sarah, too.
Yeah, I don't know. It really frustrated me that it just kind of, like, killed any want for me to play any of these decks. So it being gone, I think it's fine. I hope they actually do readjust them back, because I think it is an interesting tool to have in a game, an interesting lever to have as a potential tech card for certain metas. But
would you want it to be like season on, season off? We just
back
have Mobius
oscillate.
Yeah.
I like him as long as there's a cost. I just hated him as a 2/3.
Okay.
Like having no cost to put this card into your deck to just ruin a bunch of people's days when drops on 2, it just feels so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they do allude to something along that, you guys joke, but they did allude to that. They said that just playing cards for their normal energy costs, while we were eager to see the world Mobius would create, we expected to make an adjustment down the road in order to welcome cost reduction strategies back to the sunlight. Today is that day. So I think a lot of people are going to interpret this in a very negative way of thinking of, like, kind of peddling that pay-to-win mindset of, like, oh, release busted card, everyone buys it, and then nerf it. I don't take it necessarily like that. I take it like we're trying something. We're pushing the envelope with this being an ongoing. We know this is going to have a huge impact on the meta. We're going to monitor it, and we're willing to say, look, we have a couple of plan Bs in the background that we're ready to switch to if we need to, and we decided to do that a bit faster than we initially thought. That's how I took that statement. I don't know if you guys took it in the same light or...
No, I agree. I could almost see him needing a stat adjustment here to be more desirable if he's, you know, there's only this one-time effect kind of coming in.
Like a 1/2 or something?
Yeah, make him super easy to combo in, or a little punchier on the stats, a 2/4, something that I'm happy just to combo, even if the opponent is not cheating. Because that's the thing, is like, for me to run him, I still want to have a use for him in a deck where the opponent's not going to have a cheat. So,
I think the biggest problem with him is like a 2/3. It's like, you want 2/3s in your deck that you can play on curve. When you have a 2/3 where it's like, if I play this on curve, it's a shocker. Because who cares on turn 3, like, what my opponent's going to do almost always, unless there was, like, exactly, I don't know, unless there's, like, exactly wave and they were trying to ramp, you know? So, like, you kind of have to hold this for, like, a key turn based on the meta, and it's way too costly to add something like that in your deck for specific matchups that, like, there's you get pretty much no benefit of playing it on curve.
I think we should quickly move over to Wave, who is the true shipping here of the two, so that we can, like, theorycraft what that looks like together.
Yep. So Wave is no longer a 3-3. She's a 3-5. But rather than all cards costing 4 until the end of the next turn, all cards cost a maximum of 4 until the end of the next turn. So what this means, in layman's terms, is 5 and 6 cost cards get reduced, and she basically, you know, is treated as a ramp card solely, because 1 through 3 cost cards will not be increased to 4 at all. They will stay at that respective cost. Similarly enough, what should happen, we're waiting on a confirmation on this, but what should happen is if you have She-Hulk or Death, it might not be bringing back Death Wave to its fullest, but if Death gets reduced down to 2, for example, you destroyed 6 cards that game, she will stay at 2. We don't know if it's going to stack like old Wave did, but that's something to keep an eye on. And at least it makes, you know, Death a bit better in this case against a Wave or whatever like that. Pretty much any card for that matter, right? It no longer can be used as an offensive tool similar to a Sandman to stop things like Bounce or Sarah Miracle Dex or things like that. I will start this by saying the combination of this card and Mobius being changed in the same patch is what worries me. I think they're good changes in a vacuum, but I'm worried about the meta devolving into a vomit out your hand on 6 kind of deck, which again, Eliath can help kind of provide a pressure point to keep that at bay. But these decks like Bounce, for example, on turn 5, pick up their entire board, it feels like, and Eliath can stop a lane, but things like Hitmonkey and like Bishop already being down and established, or you know, all the cards that they have that can generate lots of power, Eliath might not be enough to kind of keep that at bay. And
he also can't stop it if they tech in Cosmo or Armor, which Bounce could. And now that Wave is not a throttle, it's really interesting. Binks, before we stray too far from the Death Wave opinion meter, if the old Death Wave interaction came back, do you think that would that be fun? Or do you think it would be, do you want that to stay gone?
The problem with Death Wave used to be that not only would you get to play a Death and something, but your opponent could only play one thing. So like if you are doing Death Wave stuff and you're playing a Death and something and your opponent vomits out Wasp, Yellow Jacket, you know, 3-1 drops, a Mysterio and a Hitmonkey, then that's kind of fine, right? You know, it's like you did a powerful thing, they did a powerful thing, let's see which one is bigger. So I think that it's okay if the old Death Wave interaction comes back, because there's not that added layer of stopping your opponent from doing their thing too. That was the real terrifying thing of Death Wave, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of on board with you. Because Death now has really shifted away from being played at all. Would love to see her come back.
It is down to 8 now too, which is a little like they didn't readjust Death, which is that's a little scarier part of it too. But like again, well, I guess with the stacking interaction, it won't matter. But it's interesting.
And She-Hulk also has really disappeared, man. I've got my Midnight Suns variants of both of those girls. I want them on the board.
I have some things about, dude. I think that this Wave change is awesome. I did like the defensive parts of Wave, but it has kind of just got devolved to the point before Mobius, where it was just like it felt pretty degenerate, so I understand. But this does like a couple of really cool things. First of all, Wave just might get seen in any deck that has multiple 6 costs now, because you can just play Wave on 3 into just like a 6 cost, and you can play Wave on 5 into a 6 cost and a 2 cost, and at a 3-5 at an absolutely premium stat line. It's just any deck that runs 2 6 drops that aren't Chavez probably just wants Wave in their deck, which I'm very excited for. Also, you mentioned like kind of being scared about things like Bounce and stuff like that. A big thing to remember, Wave got +2 power, Sandman gets +1 power. I feel like Sandman Ramp would be kind of the deck that would then rise up to really fight back against that if something really happened where there was a huge influx of dump your hand on turn 6 decks. That's where a deck like Sandman Ramp just comes and says, "Well, get destroyed." Yeah,
true. It's true. It is true, because that Sandman Ramp was already seeing a tiny bit of play, I feel like, at the beginning of this season. Mm-hmm. It was another way to slow down Loki, so it's got a couple counters to the top decks.
The Pixel Sandman is sending me. That's so funny. It's like a SNES game, dude.
Yep.
Some of these pixels look really good, I'm not going to lie. I think this is a good-looking pixel.
It's a funny-looking one, yeah.
like the, my baseline for a good Pixel has always been, if you can imagine you're playing your Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance in the back of your parents' car, you know, like on the way back from like a trip or whatever, and you can envision this as like the villain you're trying to kill in that game, then that's a good Pixel.
Okay, guys, I poached this question to my chat. There's a bundle in store. You unlock all Pixels for all time, so you'll get the newly released Pixels too.
Yes.
What price tag? At what point would you, what would you pay to be able to get every Pixel variant of every card?
I mean, that's a lot of value, dude. I mean, that's a million. But the,
right?
the other
because
big
you have
thing
to think about it,
it
means
that
you'll
you,
never open another one. You can run completely unified decks. Some of them are really good. Is it $100? Is it $50? Someone in chat said like $5.
I don't know, man. I mean,
like,
it's probably worth it for like $100, honestly. Like, like when you really
would
think
you
about it, it depends on what your what your goals are, right? But
it's true.
Does it include credits and stuff though? If it's just the Pixels,
it's just the
there.
Cosmetic. That's the
only
thing.
I don't know. $100 seems steep.
But you have to think about this. Every common Pixel you get is technically 25 credits because you can upgrade it from common to uncommon and get the
you
little
get
bit
that,
of extra juice.
That premium
so
upgrade, the half price.
There's 100, that's 2,500 credits that you're getting right there.
That is Binks the min-maxer, man.
I have so many commons I haven't updated. It's so gross. I was doing
I was
it one time
ask,
during.
Do you do that?
I was doing it one time during an ad stream, and I opened up my commons, and it was like it was like scrolling three times to get past the A's. It was bad, dude. It was not good.
To touch on your point about Sandman Ramp being a great kind of deck to come in to, you know, keep these kind of decks I'm worried about at bay. It's not that I'm worried about Sandman not doing his job, or I'm worried about these decks being too powerful like Bounce or whatever. I think they're going to be balanced. It's more so I don't want the meta to devolve into that. And the second thing is, I also don't want the meta to devolve into you have to play Sandman Ramp in order to stop it, and that's the only tool we have at our disposal. Because before, we had Wave as like a bitter, a little bit of a catch-all that you can slot into like most decks, pretty much every deck, right? To have that backup plan against Bounce. I'm not saying necessarily we should have another card like that, but a middle ground between Sandman, who's a definite build-around. By the way, can we get Sandman back to a 4 so I can play him in a Ronin deck, please? That was my favorite Sandman.
Yeah.
That was so much fun.
Dude, Sandman at 4 with Zabu and Psylocke was kind of scary.
Well, here's this.
And that could only happen for like a couple weeks.
Let me present this. Sandman at 4 has the same ability, make him like a 4-3, right? But also says this card cannot have its cost reduced.
Interesting. You can still Psylocke into it on 2. On 3.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
You can, like,
interesting.
I guess if you want to do it that way, sure. But like, you can't cheat it in another, like you can technically cheat
it. Zabu into it was
three.
Scary. When you could Zabu and Psylocke into it, that was really scary. And I think it was actually going to pop off, but the timeline between it moving up to 5 and Zabu changing to a 2-2 was like 2 weeks or something like that. Or like maybe even just a week.
Ooh, or a reverse Ebony Maw. This card can't be played until turn 4. How about that? So there's no ramping into it whatsoever.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm fine with that as a 4-3.
Yeah, I'm on board with that as well. So would you like to see, like, basically the old Wave effect come onto a new card that says, like, on reveal, both players can only play one card next turn as a throttle for these rush decks? So she's not like
I'd
this.
I'd be cool with seeing it. Just
like the new ability would not interact with cost at all. It's just like basically both players are Electrode.
Yeah. I like it. I like to give it a shot. Because, I mean, we see all these cards like all together, right? These are, you know, we have Wave, we have Mobius, and like Sandman. These all lived in that same bubble. And now Sandman has truly separated himself from the crowd. So it would be nice to have just one extra tool to really be able to stop stuff like that. That's my biggest thing. But I'm not super worried in the sense of like these decks being too much. It's just I don't want every game to be samey. Because
you can also look at
that idea.
You can also look at like junk decks as a trigger against those. So, you know, if you're especially with Ravonna now being discounted, which could potentially be a segue if you guys want. With Ravonna now being discounted, you know, a deck with double goblins is something that really fights back against those decks that's trying to play like Mysterio, Monkey, Wasp, one drop on the final turn or something like that.
And what is it, Selene? What's what's the card that makes the negative cards more negative?
No, Selene is a 1-1. Give the lowest powered card in each player's hand -3.
Yes, yeah. That can make those goblins really punch.
Yeah, and Annihilus. You know, Annihilus is coming really soon, which is another card that kind of stuffs a bunch of things over to your opponent's side and stops them from these swingy turns. So, I mean, I agree with you. I love Sandman. I think Sandman is actually, like, people will probably yell at me about this. I think it's actually one of the most skill-testing decks in the game. Like, being able to use your resources turn after turn after you've kind of, like, completely locked out the game is something that a lot of people are really, really not good at if you haven't played the deck for a while. Right. So I actually really like kind of like Sandman versus other things meta and kind of having this tension. But I do think that there are going to be some other things that can stop these. I mean, Loki, I mean, I think most of us can agree Loki, I think, is the deck that's going to kind of break out and be the scariest deck after this patch. And probably is right now, too, because we're, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say
yeah, because you can play Loki on 4 or 5, and the Mobius not just being a catch-all stopper means that you're going to get really good value from very consistent value as well from your Loki.
On top of that,
yep.
Now, when Mobius came out and Mobius was ever Loki decks, even when he was still a 3/5 prior to this last recent OTA change, had pretty much cut out Quinjet for the most part. Yeah. So you lost out on this turbo, like, I'm going in on everything. Now, with Mobius
back
no longer
on the menu, baby.
Prey, Quinjet comes back. You now have a curve that looks like Quinjet on 1, Collector on 2, maybe a Cosmo to protect your Collector, and then Loki on 4, and you're like, ooh, have fun. Look at all these cards. And Mobius isn't there to stop you. I really think Loki is the biggest winner of this entire patch. It's insane.
I mean, yeah, he got his buddy Collector looking better next to him as well, which this Ravonna change, to bring us back here, kind of sad to see now that both Collector and Angela are moved out of range. It's like, oh, those were some of the like the reasons that I was playing her before.
Where do you, I mean, besides like Mr. Negative, right? She's definitely way better in negative now, which, by the way, negative in general is better.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about this in negative.
Unless you have,
oh my gosh, there's another one.
Well, Binks, I know it's going to happen. The first or second game you stream, someone's going to forget to take Mobius out of their deck. You're going to play against them, and they're going to read him and be like, oh, this sucks. And then they're going to play him on 5 when you play Jane Foster.
Oh, no. All right. Don't put me in the clip. Put me in the clip. I actually didn't think about this in negative. I was playing her in Jane Foster negative already, and now she's so good in Jane Foster negative.
Right.
Because she helps you out if you don't draw the negative, and also now she can get it to you.
You have 3 ways to ramp into negative on 3. And Psylocke, Zabu, and her. That's really good. I've always said you should have what makes a deck good is giving it a rule of threes, right? Destroy is good because you have 3 destroy effects in Carnage, Venom, and Deathlock. Shuri's great because you have 3 different pivot points to go off of what you're trying to buff and what you're trying to increase on power. This is another example of negative being a lot better because of this. And on top of which, you can help and build around either of these as well. You can go into the Wong thing to build off of Zabu. You already have Iron Man and stuff like that to really build off of this. So not only do your pivot points that come in 3 provide better ramp into negative, your pivot points also come in different avenues in which you can pivot into, Iron Man or, Wong and those style of games. Which, to bring it back full circle, Binks, when you're talking about how you feel that Sandman decks and those ramp decks are pretty skill intensive, I would agree, because that deck, you have an abundance of choice at the top end, which presents several different pivot points of identifying where you go and planning ahead of your game. Is this going to be a Black Panther into Zola setup game? Well, in that case, you need to be aware of what the locations are and understand where you need to put your cards and not like mess yourself up with what eventually Arm Zola will be, where you can go later. Or is this going to be an Odin into like Leader or Dr. Doom or Eliath or whatever? All these different pivot points have different strengths and weaknesses against various different decks, and you have to identify that by turn 3 as you're dropping your ramp spell. And I think Ravonna and negative present a similar idea, whether or not you have negative in hand.
Do you think you put all 3 of them? I don't think you put this Zabu and Psylocke in a negative deck.
I think
this might just take the place of Psylocke, right?
Yeah, I have a hard time. The problem becomes is that there's a critical mass, right? While you're getting all these additional chances to get negative on three. You're also getting additional chances of whiffing once the negative's in play, drawing your Zabu, drawing your Psylocke, drawing this. True. So I feel like, I don't know, I feel like this probably switches off with Zabu or Psylocke, depending on how many fours you have outside. Like, if you have multiple fours outside of, even if you have, like, one more four, like, even if you just had Darkhawk in the deck, you probably still...
Yeah, like, Hawk and Wong, right, is the build?
Yeah, if you have three, you absolutely keep Zabu in, but, like, if you only had negative, then you definitely want to cut the Zabu for Psylocke. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. Dude, I'm so excited now. You just got me so freaking excited for playing this in Mr. Negative decks, and I'm allowed to play Mr. Negative decks now.
You are. You've been given the card, the allowance. It's legal. You can play Mr. Negative.
I went on so many Mobius rants last month of just how much I hated. Like, I was like, oh, do you want to do this? Oh, that sucks.
No.
Here's my 2/3.
Yeah.
Any other places
I sacrificed one point of tempo to be able to annihilate your entire game plan?
Yeah. Any other places you want to put Ravonna besides a negative or just like that goblin? Like, I'm not going to lie.
Not until she gets Selene.
That's fair. I didn't like... Well, Selene's a one... Are you just trying to like make your own... Using her as a ramp spell, Selene?
You could either use her to ramp a card into the Ravonna play, or you could use it to make that goblin actually good.
Selene, come on, because you kind of need a Nihilist in that deck too, right? Feel like
you're gonna maybe want a Nihilist. I don't know, just
playing like a 1-1 sucks ass.
Yeah, no, it's not a 1-1, Binks. It's a 1-1 that made my goblin better and made one of their cards worse.
Yeah, 1-1. Yeah, we're saying the same thing.
It's a 1-1 that made me have a 3-5 and them have Iron Man at 5-2, unplayable. I don't know. I love that.
I think it's interesting. I think you need a Nihilist in that deck to really make it pop. I don't know if it'll pop. If Selene comes out first, I don't know if that deck will pop until a Nihilist comes out, because I think you kind of need
maybe
the,
not,
the other parts of it. But I could see that. I mean, it's just whenever I see a 1-1, I'm just like, well, yeah.
But then I got my Viper, and they've got a 1-1 and my -5 Goblin, and then they have stuck with -2 power in their own hand.
Bast my goblins and...
I mean, Selene hitting an Iron Man in their opening hand is really funny, though.
I mean, but honestly, what else is it going to hit? It's probably going to hit Iron Man based on, like, current meta. Maybe it's going to hit if Hawk comes back because Zabu comes back, I don't know. What else do people run that's really low power?
I think Darkhawk has the best chance of overcoming that type of hit to it.
True, but it still makes Selene's overall stat line look better.
I think a Ravonna Darkhawk deck is going to be really good.
Yeah.
I think that people forgot. Like, this card was, like, fine, and, like, people were still figuring out how to make this card work. And by the time Mobius came around, it was starting to get some popularity, and, like, there was starting to be some really mean, just, like, good card, Hobgoblin, Green Goblin, play your Darkhawk, play just good stuff kind of deck that had Ravonna that was, like, feeling very solid. And then, obviously, Mobius comes off and wipes her off the face of the earth. But I think it's a 2-1. She's terrible. She's scary, man. I'm really excited to play her.
And she's so much easier to play with Zabu at the same time. And then Hawk at 2 cost. Oh. With a Nico that copies it back to hand. Ooh, baby.
He just burst out like crazy. I'm really excited for Ravonna. This is a card that I was really excited to play around with. And, like, we only had a week. And I felt like I was starting to get places, but it just wasn't fully clicking yet. So being able to mess around with her again is really exciting.
Yep.
All right. Next up is my favorite change in the patch. It's Negasonic Teenage Warhead. This is immediately, I'm calling it right here and now, this is now a meta staple in many decks.
What?
We've already seen Eliath being an incredibly powerful card. This is mini Eliath now. She went from a 3/5 after any card is played here, destroy this card and that card, to a 3/2 after an enemy card is played here, destroy it once per game. I see Teddy grabbing at his beard, kind of wincing at me and stuff, just being like, I don't know. Having the opportunity.
Here's the thing, is that
having priority.
I was
and
playing
your opponent's card. Come
I
on.
I was playing Negasonic when I could play Death and Null. Like, I had my old Destroy kind of soup deck ran Negasonic, and I would maybe play Nimrod.
Okay.
I would maybe pop something of theirs and then play my Null. It worked.
What? You don't play this in a destroy deck.
It's better now.
Yes, you do. That's what I used to do.
Expand your mind, Teddy.
I'm saying the old Negasonic was better in a destroy deck.
I think this is terrifying. I don't.
Thank you.
Think it's maybe it's a metal staple. I don't. Well, I mean, like lockdown decks, like this sucks, dude. Like, can you imagine, like Storm, like a location, they put a Nebula there, and then they just put a Negasonic on another lane, and you're not, like, a deck that just has, a one-drop that you can just, like, play into it for fun, like Thanos? Like, you're a right. deck, and you're like, I need all these cards, so I just can't play here ever again. just panic?
Yeah.
I'm really excited for this change. This is a devastating card to play against. Like, this is... People are going to hate this card. People are going to hate this card a lot.
The big kicker, right, is that it goes through Cosmo. It's not on reveal. She just happens.
Yeah. And again, in a world where you want to get priority, if you're playing Eliath already, she easily slots into a deck. I mean, Lockdown's a great example of being able to kind of force your opponent into a lane. And if you don't have Eliath, that's fine. How many times have you gone into the late game in a lot of different decks and matchups where there's a very good amount of them, especially in right today's meta, which very well could shift, don't get me wrong. Especially with Mobius and Wave out of the fray a little bit. There's a lot of just play big thing or like two things, right? And her still sniping one of those cards, we're going back to the old leader days where people have to worry about what order they play stuff in. They can't just willy-nilly go, you know, A then B. They got to actually be like, well, if they have Negasonic, I got to make sure I put like the Wasp first or whatever. So I am excited for this card. I think she's just a mini Eliath. And it's going to be one of the more skill-intensive cards, but that's such a good thing, and she's going to be a blast to play with, no pun intended.
One thing I really love about her, too, is, like, it solves all, in my opinion, like, there's obviously good things, like you talked about with Noel, that she used to have. It solves all the problems that she had. So, like, a big problem she had, it's, like, if you play three and then they just play a small card against it, then you just lose all of her value, and it kind of feels bad. Now you at least have a 3-2 that still just sticks there, and it's like you get a little bit of value and you're still pushing for that lane a little bit. You don't get rid of all the power. The other one, this is the reason that I never played her. She was so awkward sometimes. If you like play her on 4 and then your opponent just stared at her and didn't do anything, and it's like, okay, well, am I just going to wait for them to do something? Because what if they just play like small card, big card at the very end, and then they flip the lane really bad, and I have nothing to do about it. And I obviously can't play there because I don't want to blow up my own cards. That sucks. So, like, she's very uncomfortable and awkward to find the right turn to play her in. And that's kind of why I never really utilized her. And some people really swear by her. And they think that, you know, in her previous iteration, there was ways that you could really use it and leverage it against your opponents. But to me, it was, like, the awkwardness and the ways that she would hurt you bad. It's the same... Interestingly, it's kind of the same problem that, like, Jean Grey sometimes has, where it's, like, it's on paper really, really good, but, like... It affects you in this really annoying way that you don't really think about until, like, everyone thought Jean Grey was going to be, like, the best card that month, and now she's kind of a bit obscure and still finds some lanes. But, like, that's kind of how Negasonic was just so awkward. But now all that's just fixed. Now she's just, like, there's very little cost to playing her out. And just, like, even if they destroy it with a small card, it's like, all right, well, I kind of annoyed their game plan at least a little bit. So I love this change, and I think that she is going to be very strong.
Wishing she could have gone down to a 3-1 so that Ravonna could have cheapened her, but yeah.
Teddy, I want you to look real quick, or at least both of you. Can either one of you tell me what the background of this image is?
The
background?
Vormir? Yeah. She's Vormir on a stick.
Yeah.
She'd be Vormir on a stick.
For the opponent, exactly. Like your ability to drop her down just on curve and then keep adding a couple cards that you can freely is quite nice.
So big. It doesn't affect you at all anymore, which is so, so important. That's just, in my opinion, that's the biggest thing with cards. It's a card that's only good for you and only bad for your opponent. They're at a premium. Yeah. And Negasonic didn't used to be that at all and used to feel very bad. So it's another reason I play Goose, and I know Goose is good. Uh-huh. I understand that Goose is good, but I play Goose in a game, and then I'm like, I really want to play this card here. I hate this card.
Yeah.
And then I just cut it from all of my decks. So, like, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And, like, I've had it countless games where, like, playing Thanos or, like with the Reality Stone or even with Vormir pops up normally where an opponent, it gets changed into Vormir or they kind of ignore it for too long and then late game they're like, well, I just lose that lane because I can't commit what I need to do that lane. And being able to spring up a Vormir on command against your opponent, I find to be incredibly powerful, even if it just creates an awkward little friction point for them and what they need to decide to do. She's done her job, and that's already really good.
This is also just like so good in the current meta of Bloodstone everywhere. You know the opponent is playing to Bloodstone. If you can flip and then catch whatever they tried to buff, that takes away so much of their investment.
Merc of 5-10 vision, or even just play it the turn before you know they want to play their 5-10 vision. Right. They just look at it like, damn, why'd you do that?
Yeah. Sacrifice something else. Play vision somewhere else. Yeah. Like, that's where she can, I think, be incredible to adapt right now.
This is exciting. I definitely agree with you, Brandon, the fact that this is maybe, wildly enough, this may be the most exciting. Like, the overall meta shift with Mobius and Wave being changed is going to be exciting, but, like, this card is, you have to rethink every deck to see if this card fits into it. It's really cool.
Yeah, my friendship with all the cards on all these buffs and nerfs just ended completely. I'm best friends with Negasonic Teenage Warhead now.
You can play her in that new negative deck, Binks.
Hell yeah, dude.
I mean, a 2-3, you know, just if you have priority, 2-3 bomb on the last turn is really sick.
You can play a Leviathan in that negative deck as well, Binks. You got a Leviathan on one, Nega on the other.
just crush them. I must break you.
That is a very good point, which that's purely a negative deck thing. Though,
yes,
on
just
five,
negative deck things.
Here's the thing. You can play her plus another 2-drop on 5, like in a lane, and be like, you're going to be afraid of that lane. And then you essentially force and pigeonhole your opponent to play another lane, in which you go a Leviathan 6.
If you get turn 7 and then you play Wave, you can still Eliath and Negasonic too. So, yeah.
That's also terrifying, yes.
Yeah, it is.
Question.
I can't wait to do that.
I know they discussed it a little bit and they were talking about like the death interactions. If you get early Sarah and then Wave on 5, can you play 2 6 drops?
You'd have to.
I don't
have
think
some
we know,
ramp.
Right?
Like, if you can go Wave Psylocke on 6
No, you play
whatever.
Psylocke into Sarah on 4. So Sarah's on the board, and then on 5,
you
go Wave. Could you play 2 6 drops? Because that's actually crazy.
I don't think
this
so.
This is the thing about the Death Wave thing, because we need to understand is, does Wave still do her old thing of just, I'm the last ditch, like, effort? Like, this is the very last thing that has the final
things are
today.
4.
So they are stuck at 4. Because if you can make them 4 and then Sarah reduces them to 3, then that would mean Deathwave is back.
Right.
Yeah. So I get those two interactions are kind of based on each other. Also, it might now be in order because, like, something's happened in order. So, like, if the Sarah was down first, then the card was 5, and then Wave comes in and says maximum 4. Whereas if Wave was, like, if somehow you played both Wave and then Sarah on 5, I don't know how you'd ever work that out except for Project Pegasus. But then would that mean that, like, the Wave goes first and says everything is set to maximum 4, so it goes to 4, and then the Sarah is the next arrow? I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see how these things turn out when they change, like, the core ways that these interactions, like, fundamentally interact with each other.
Yep.
All right, then last two are pretty benign changes.
Right.
The first one is Ant-Man just kind of catching him up with Mojo and Dazzler. So if you play him in Space Throne, that counts as full. He gets the +3. That's pretty much it. Just stuff like that. So, pretty pedestrian change.
Same thing, yeah.
I don't think it's going to
happen. You
never
play him on Space Zone anyway. Let's be real.
No,
unless it's an accident.
Now, I would love to see more locations play around with that, like, varying size of number of cards, rather than just adding, like, the token cards to both sides, but be something that is more restrictive. What's a location that could have just a duo instead of, you know, a singleton?
Like just two cards.
Also,
two cards would be interesting.
I am obsessed with the idea of either a location or a card that would merge two locations together and let you play 8 cards. And so you still have to win the 2 lanes, right? But then it becomes a 2-lane game, but once 4
that
cards
sounds
and
like
once
a
8.
UI nightmare.
Yes. Would also,
it?
Doesn't that just
if
turn
just
into
merged?
Total power? Because if there's only 2 locations, it's always just total power across all 3.
Yeah, you get one regular size location, then that location just gets big.
The wombo barn. Combo of, like, the combos you could pull off with 8 card slots on a single location is just really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I bet the devs sitting here listening to this just putting
like,
on
no,
a list.
Teddy, this is... No, Teddy. Ideas we will never do.
I think Glenn is going to definitely agree with that. And then last we have Eliath. This is another little niche thing, but, you know, pretty cool. It's going to be basically now only destroys enemy cards that are still on the opponent's side. Essentially, the idea was some people said, I played a Hobgoblin against my opponent. I reveal first. Hobgoblin goes to their side. Eliath flips, kills the Hobgoblin. Seconder says, well, technically, the Hobgoblin is now a friendly card so because it's on your side, so he shouldn't kill it. We're updating that to reflect what people should expect. I will say,
the animation was real funny.
I agree with the old way. That makes more sense in my mind. Because if my opponent, because I'm coming from Magic, so there's a difference and a discrepancy between owning and controlling a card in Magic. And there are cards that state the difference and, you know, like return all cards you own to your side of the field is an example of a card that exists. So in my mind, the opponent owns the Goblin still. So it's still, in my mind, an enemy card.
They quote-unquote played the card, which is on the text of the card, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I get it from a balance perspective, and I'm fine with this change. It gives you another niche kind of way to get around Eliath, because there have been plenty of times where Eliath's 3 power isn't enough to win on its own, so -8 on their side can still present a win for me, even through an Eliath, if I have priority. So that's cool. I'm happy about that in a balance standpoint. But from a text standpoint of reading the card, I was cool with the old way.
Ravona Goblin's deck stays winning.
Yes.
What do you guys think about Eliath as a 6/3?
I haven't been enjoying it. I still play him a lot.
But
I think it is way more fair.
A card or like playing? I think because
it's
good.
I don't think it's that bad for the game. I think it's fine for the game. I still think it's like I feel like it went from a easy top 5 card to like a top 15 card maybe from 6/5 to 6/3. I feel like a lot of people don't agree with that and think that it's much less consequential, but I mean, I don't know. 2 power and snap is there's so many situations where like you're down by 4 power in a lane or 5 power in a lane, and Eliath would have easily won you that lane because you're winning so far somewhere else. But now it's just like, oh, well, this card is worthless now.
Especially the more that they move, like they push these moving cards, the Vision being good, Jeff being good, Nightcrawler being good,
right,
means that the Eliath is not as oppressive, and those final turns get way more creative and mind gamey, which is, I think, exactly what we want.
Yeah, I think Eliath is a perfect, well-designed card that I understand they kind of missed the mark a little bit in power. So them bringing it down to 6/3 makes him an S-tier card, in my opinion, for both design and power level. I agree he's probably easily a top 15, probably sneaks into top 10, in my opinion, but is a necessary evil that a lot of people won't like. But you need to have an environment in which you can't just be in the last 3 months that we had prior to Eliath of dodging priority with like Kitty and stuff like that over and over again, which I found that to be a way less enjoyable meta than what people deem as the Eliath meta, because it presents a bit more of like, you know, you got to think about what you do. You can't just, you know, vomit up your hand. And again, like, it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just my play style. I like mid-range stuff in most card games I play. I like curving out. I like just good efficient cards. I'm not a big aggro player, so balance doesn't speak to me as much, I guess.
Oh, I'm all aggro. All aggro all day. So are we just memeing, or is Eliath actually a Mr. Negative staple?
No.
If Mr. Negative is playing.
I don't think you can put Eliath in that deck. You just have so many other ways of getting like point slamming over the top, and you never have priority.
True. That is true. You're generally coming from behind in priority by a lot.
Like six, like a 3/6 is like, I mean, I don't know. It'd probably be crushed. You could test. Maybe there's some negative decks, but I definitely don't think it's a staple. I think it could be an interesting tech inclusion based on the meta, but absolutely not a staple in my opinion.
Okay.
I will say just one other thing about Eliath is like, now leader was a problem. I used to always say leader wasn't that big of a deal. People just suck at playing around him, which I do think the second part is true, which is what I want to talk about. But I do admit now leader was very much a problem and bad for the game in its original state. I think they've changed him to make him very, very fair and a cool inclusion in the game. But like, so many people will just see a card like Eliath, they'll lose to him, and just be like, I could never beat this card. Like, it was this is impossible. There's nothing I could have possibly done, and it's like. Yeah, there is. Like, you can think about it. Like, you can, like, be like, okay, if they have Eliath, then this, this, and this. okay, well, let's say they don't have Eliath, I can go, you know, there's all these different trees that you can go down, and you can find some really, really cool wins around Eliath, and you can get some very, very rewarding wins against your opponent who just slams down Eliath, thinking that it's an easy way to win, especially if you can identify. Now it's much more easy to identify if Eliath is in your opponent's deck, whereas before you kind of had to expect him in every deck, which was frustrating, but now as a 6-3, it's a bit more niche, and it's kind of certain decks want him. But people will just resort to complaining about a card without ever putting any onus on themselves to learn how to play around it better and to, like, improve as a player around, like, a card like Eliath that's so dominating to play around.
Yeah, one of the ways that you play around it is by slamming a big lead early and maybe even filling up a location, which is kind of breaking what had for the longest time been the golden rule in Snap, which is you don't fill a location until turn 6. But now with these Eliath decks, they're only 3 power. How are they going to catch up? You know, if they're not running Shang-Chi, they're running Eliath instead. You can just outdistance them and then be able to close it out somewhere else.
Or the Spectrum deck I was playing, it's like, you know, you have your Wong lane where it's that, like, too. Obviously the Spectrum's going to go in that Wong lane. And you're like, your opponent like had snapped. They're a lockdown-y style deck. If they play Eliath in that Wong lane, I win. But if I play the Spectrum here, I lose this other buff. I dominate them, and then you play it, and then they play Eliath, and then they get casserole, and you're like, all right, get destroyed, you know, like, just these other ways that you have to, like, think about it. I think that's important.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that people don't think of the most is early decisions. Mm-hmm. Turns 1 through 4 are incredibly important to the game. People always talk about turns 5 and 6 as, like, the biggest impacts. That's where, like, the flashy stuff happens. But what you don't notice and what you don't remember is that decision you made on turn 2 to play something like Luke Cage instead of Silk or, you know, anything that just has a little bit higher power. And then it turns out you lost that lane by 1, right? Or lost it by a couple. These little tiny pivot points of, like, identifying what card you should play to really hedge your bets is incredibly impactful in this game. And most people just kind of look at their hand, be like, I have a 2-drop, that's a good card, I'll play it. And they don't think beyond that, which is fine if you want to play it at a more casual pace, but at the same level, you shouldn't complain so much about certain things if you're not willing to look beyond the simple place.
Mm-hmm.
But that was this patch.
All right, there's the patch. I'm incredibly excited.
Me too, man.
It is going to be hitting.
I'm giddy. I'm giddy to test out a lot of these cards.
There's so much to do because it's hitting at the exact same time as Werewolf by Night.
Wait. We have received official word from Glenn that the original functionality of Death Wave will not be returning.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, so that means the Sarah Wave will not let you do 2-3 costs or 2-6 costs either. Fair enough. Fine. Like, it's a very minor point. I think the card's still going to be fascinating to play around in its new version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
You heard it here on the pre-recorded Can't Stop Snapping podcast. But Werewolf by Night coming out, been heralded as one of the top cards of the season. Binks, what's the excitement meter on Werewolf?
Dude, I think Werewolf, it's going to be one of the worst cards this season. I think that
he's more dog water than Werewolf.
I think that the only card he's going to be better than is Black Knight and probably Man Thing, but I think both of those are kind of very, very niche cards. So he's probably better than those. Here's my problem with Black Knight. So Black Knight, it's coming up on the screen now. It's a 3-3. Yep. It is a 3-3 that says whenever you play a on-reveal card, move to that location and gain +2 power. Which seems really interesting and really, really powerful because you play this werewolf out, and boom, 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 you play all these on reveals, you get a giant werewolf at the very end. Now, people don't think...
A lot of decks just like playing on reveals,
The biggest things that I'm scared about with this card is clunkiness. So, decisions on where you play cards and which location you play cards are very important. We talked about this at the beginning. You know, like, the early decisions on where you play cards is very, very impactful on how turns 5 and 6 end up and what position you put yourself into. So I feel like people don't realize how clunky this is going to be, where if you play into any location that has more than one card in it, so it has 2 cards, you play an on-reveal there, the werewolf jumps and fills that lane. And then you have to be playing another on-reveal to reopen that lane. And you can't do that on, like, turn 6. You have to play it on turn 5 to open that lane for turn 6 to be able to move it. So that just in general is going to be very, very annoying to play around with the card. And you know, there's a positive of playing an unrevealed Movie the Werewolf, but there's also a negative of, like, if I play this unrevealed, then it's going to jump the werewolf over here. And on turn 6, if you're like, okay, I have to play this unrevealed, but I want to play it first. But if I play it first and it's going to move the werewolf, then I'm going to lose this lane. And then it's just going to cause so many problems with dealing with this werewolf moving around and how it's going to affect your board state and getting things to how it want. I think it's going to be a much higher skill intensive card than people are expecting. So, like, unless you're very, very good at the game, you're probably going to misplay all the time with werewolf. So that's already a factor. But also, I just don't think that the payoff is, like, that worth it. I really think that it's going to cause you more problems than you expect, and it's going to be rough. So I think that where Werewolf will fit is a Movement Surfer type list, because I think that Movement Surfer now might have a kind of like influx of enough cards where it's just like quite strong. So I think that it'll fit into that deck, and maybe that deck goes to like tier 2 or tier 3. But I think that the pure kind of like movie style decks, like the Elsa type move decks, like, you don't want to play this card with Elsa, really. Like, you can, but it can be very, very frustrating. That's just my opinion. I really think that this card is super overhyped.
The Silky move does not play very many on reveals right now. Mm-hmm. They have Silk, which is really free-flowing, Jeff, Nightcrawler, Vision, and they're bouncing into Kraven, Spider-Man. So, you know, Spider-Man in this is kind of interesting, because Spider-Man will move, the werewolf will jump to Spider-Man, but then Spider-Man jumps away.
Well, it'll probably be the Spider-Man will jump first, right? And then the werewolf will move to where Spider-Man jumped from, I think.
Oh, well, that's even better.
That is actually quite good, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I think it's going to be one of those you're just going to have to feel it in hand.
I think it's a card where, like, people... The same thing happened with Nico, where, like, people thought Nico was going to be good for different reasons, and, like, Nico ended up being very strong, like, way stronger than I expected Nico being.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but for, like, different reasons, just because, like, you put her in decks with all the effects are pretty good. So I actually really, really understated Nico as well. And now
Nico is on reveal. She'll play with Werewolf.
She will play with Werewolf. I'm interested to see where you guys see Werewolf fitting in a deck that's going to be so good, because I've seen a lot. Both of you seem very excited about it when we were talking pre-show. I'm just really interested in, like, what the use case of this card is going to be.
So,
yeah, I think it's going to be...
Go ahead.
I mean, it can punch up for anything. Like, maybe a Thanos move could even utilize it. You've got, like, Nico and Bluestone that can move things around, and then some of the other just run-of-the-mill, like, Jeff and Vision that it already wants to play. And you have every stone is on reveal. So, like, very easy combo activations for Werewolf. The Surfer deck,
Stones are not
the natural
on reveal. Soulstone and Soulstone and Power Stone are both
fair,
on reveal now.
We took that away on Orange Stone, which does hurt it, but it's still, like, I think enough with really cheap on reveal activations to get it to pop. That's what it's going to be, I feel like, is a deck with the cheapest on reveals possible, basically, is what I'm looking forward to.
I mean, my thing with this card is the turning of the floor of it, right? I know, Binks, you're looking at it from, like, the skill intensiveness of it, which I'm not going to argue at all. It is going to be very skill intensive. You need to know how to set up your board. We talked about setting up proper early play and stuff, and be able to kind of build around it.
It might be the most skill intensive card in the game. I'm not joking around. I really think this might be the most skill intensive card in the game.
100%.
But if you look at the floor of it and the opportunity cost it has, so let's look at it in the easiest home we can think of, like Surfer, right? You play this card, and you play no other on reveals except for Surfer on turn 6. He's a 3/7. That's good. That is a good stat line, right? And that is something that Surfer will be happy to have. If you bump it up a little bit and play it one more additional, like, on reveal, like, let's say you're going back to normal, like, Sarah Surfer, like how we used to have, because now Mobius is gone, we can actually play Sarah again in our Surfer deck. So on 5, you play Sarah. On 6, you go, let's say, Maximus, he hops over, Surfer over here, hops over, you know, and then there you go. Right? At least those two cards alone. If you go Sarah, you'll play a third one. But, of course, the opportunity cost of him seems to be pretty low for his stat line, and that's good. Like, it's just, like, he just fits. Otherwise, I think he can just go in any deck where you feel like you have enough ways to get use out of him, and the flexibility in which you can pivot him to go over other spots and maybe present some mind games for your opponent, because like 70-something percent of all cards in Marvel Snap are on reveals, he works with pretty much anything. Does that mean he should go in every deck? No. You should not be playing him in a Wong reveal style deck, for example, because the second he clogs up your Wong lane, you cry, and that's very bad. I am a little against doing Thanos because of the stones. Where we talked about earlier how I said Elsa provided a made a detriment into success with the stones, I don't think he does that with those. Unless you're playing, maybe, a destroy version of Thanos, in which you can make use of, you know, him hopping around from all these on reveals and the stones, and then destroying stuff with Carnage or Venom, Venom eating him up to just be like, okay, you're done moving, I got the power out of him, and that kind of thing.
Destroy Thanos, rule, move Surfer.
Rule, yeah, there we go. Rule lawyer time. Can we confidently say if the on reveal card will fully resolve before he moves? Like, I play Carnage. Is he jumping and getting eaten, or is Carnage eating and then he's jumping to the open space?
I think works Carnage just like eats silk. And then he jumps.
Okay.
Would be my opinion, which means it's the on reveal finishes, the card gets played, the on reveal finishes, and then he makes his move.
I'd agree.
He'd be really bad if it was the other way around.
Just for no reason, as a joke. Like, just
yeah.
Well, it's weird. Like, Elsa buffs them before, not after, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think really my thing is like what kind of decks does it fit into, and how good will those decks be? Like I said, like you mentioned Surfer, I think it'll push like a movement Surfer style deck into like a competitive situation where it's like a tier 3 type deck, because I think that it's kind of hit its critical mass now with like Polaris, Spider-Man, Vulture. Like, you probably don't even use Vulture in that deck, which is crazy. Like, Werewolf by Night, and there's these, and like the then you can get like a Kraven that kind of pops, and then there's all these like little tiny like interactions that works, and then you just burst the Surfer at the end. So I think that deck will rise. I just don't see Werewolf going in like you mentioned, like any deck that just has a small amount of on reveals. Like Thanos, I have the same problem where it's just like it's going to clog a lane for you, and then like you're going to be on turn 5 and you're gonna be like, Jesus Christ, how do I want to play this double dinosaur. Now I'm just never unclogging this lane until I completely unclog it, and then I just throw that lane by playing any on reveal on turn 6. I know I'm just throwing that lane, so now I have to win these two lanes because my opponent knows I'm probably going to pull the Werewolf by Night. It's like, I feel like it just causes like that issue with Thanos because it fills the board too fast. A destroy version of Thanos, like you said, that you Killmonger all the stones away, and then the Werewolf kind of starts to pop off. I kind of like that idea, sounds fun. But yeah, it's just tough. I just don't see any other deck where like the idea of using like Elsa and move cards is better than the idea of using Werewolf by Night and move cards. And I think that you can't really use Werewolf by Night in an Elsa deck because of like just to me, when I think about like that Elsa deck, I'm just like, once I have any like situation where like I can't just play my good stuff through Elsa, I guess you could use it as like an Elsa and then play a small on reveal somewhere and then it's another trigger. I do just think that it's going to, they're just going to cut it from the deck. I feel like that card's just going to end up getting cut after testing.
What about a bounce deck?
That's
a little unorthodox, but like a bounce moving deck with like over Elsa and stuff like that. A lot of small things with on reveal triggers, being able to bring it back like, in hand.
It's like bounce move, right? You've got Forge, Human Torch, Iron Fist, Ghost Spider, and then Werewolf with Falcon and Beast picking stuff up, and also those cards opening up board space and reactivating Werewolf. It's just Werewolf coming in on turn 3 gets clunky, right?
Yeah, maybe it replaces Bishop in the versions of those deck that still run Bishop.
Yeah, if you're pivoting the move, then you just cut Bishop and do him instead.
Yeah,
which
that's
I think
a good point. I think on average,
he could get bigger than Bishop in some instances if you construct the deck right. I think there's a
it's
lot
just
of
that
play to
Bishop
it.
Has the... Bishop is grounded in that location, right? So you set him up in the kiln, and you know you're still going to be able to scale it, whereas Werewolf is like, he's going to leave.
Are you guys worried about
that? There's the downside.
Are you worried about that situation of... Because the biggest thing for me is turn 6, right? Wherever you play your last on reveal, that's where Werewolf is going to end up. Or you're not moving him on the final turn, and it can get really clunky. Do you guys fear... Because like that to me is something that I'd never hear anyone talk about, and that's my biggest fear is how to... Like turn 6 is so important by getting certain points on certain areas. If you're just hamstringed by this card, like Werewolf by Night, where it just makes your decisions just annoying as hell. I guess Silk is a bit of like a similar situation. But what are your guys' thoughts on that? Of like how on turn six you would deal with the fact that you'd have to anywhere the on reveal goes, that's where the Werewolf by Night jumps.
I kind of like it because I still see a lot of opponents playing Eliath in my meta pocket. And so a Werewolf repositioning, not getting destroyed by Eliath, and then being this fake out on kind of dodging their control, I think can lead to some fun mind games.
So you think the positives how I'm of how it could work are better it? Than the negatives of how it could restrict you?
That's going to come down to...
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be like on player skill. I don't know yet if I have the player skill to really... make cubes off of it, but I want to try.
Yeah. I'm excited to play around with the card. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm very excited. It's a very cool card.
Yeah.
Surprised you were saying... You were sleeping on Man-Thing a little bit, saying that he's probably better than Man-Thing. Man-Thing's too niche. Binks, I'm here to tell you. But our boy Man-Thing is not as niche as you think he is. Where are you playing Man-Thing? What decks do you typically play him in?
Do you think that Luke Cage is not going to get decks. Even more play now that Mobius is weak?
You should. Luke Cage is pretty good.
I would argue the simple package of Man-Thing and Luke Cage in your deck is all you need to make him good.
I like
that. And oftentimes, you don't even need Luke Cage. Because I have had so many games where I'm like waiting, you know, see where he can go, see where my opponent's setting stuff up, especially with like Thanos in the meta. I'm like, Man-Thing. And then I play nothing else in that lane, and then that lane is lost for them immediately.
Honestly, with Zabu, I think, getting a little bit of a defibrillator here with the Mobius change, Man-Thing is just going to be in a good cards 4-cost deck.
Yeah.
Right?
And Spectrum, any Spectrum deck, I think, have very big consideration.
That's what I'm playing Man-Thing in right now.
Anytime I look at my 4-cost cards, I'm like, well, it's like Man-Thing or Namor. And Namor has one more power, but like with Shang-Chi being around, you can't just really activate Namor's ability. You're just playing as a 4-6 ongoing. You already run Luke Cage in that deck always whenever you're playing Spectrum. So, yeah. I mean, Man-Thing, Luke Cage, I think is interesting. But it's just hard. It'll be much better... It's one of those decks that just ebbs and flows, right? When Luke Cage isn't very prevalent, Man-Thing's going to be terrifying when Luke Cage is in like 40% of decks or something, which just feels like he is almost now. Then like Man-Thing feels a little bit iffy unless you're getting other buffs out of it.
I do love the moment where the opponent's rogue steals my Man-Thing, and I was like, oh, remarkably similar for you, it looks like.
Wow, that did a lot.
Actually, it's the exact same thing because the rogue even just reduces itself, which is really funny.
Yes.
I had someone rogue my Man-Thing and then blow up their own rogue to get rid of it, and I thought that was really novel. That felt really interesting. Wow. Like it was a lot of work for not much back, but it was fun. No, dude, I love these comic.
They're so good.
Such a cool idea. I'm surprised none of these have come out yet.
Yeah.
This one comes out.
Could we please get a variant rush? Oh, a second inner variant rush of these.
Bad news for you, Teddy. They said they'd have no plans on doing a variant rush at all.
The Hellfire Gala is going to be another like shop takeover at 1,200 gold.
Correct.
Tears.
Money.
Yeah, they realize they're like, instead of giving you guys these cool seasonal variants, we can just
pay for
sell
it.
Them to you. Look at that.
We don't even give you gold anymore in the caches, but
yeah,
people are tired of crying about that. Just buy it. Don't be a poor person. Play with variants.
They were doing the Dan Hip shop takeover. I feel like they were doing that as like a testing ground of like, will people buy a bunch of Dan Hip variants when they show up?
Yeah,
they're like,
turns out they will.
What if we did that for the more expensive variants, though?
Yeah, having to be all 1,200, all the moon, that one felt a little iffy. I feel like they should have made some.
Watu being a 1,200 variant for the Midnight Suns.
I did not get him. I got a bunch of the other ones, though, and I was very happy to see that they were going to expand that collection with Nico, so hopefully we get even more expansion. Cause
like, look at this dude.
They just
looks so goofy.
It's a 1-2 now. 1-2. He watches.
How many of these did you guys get, by the way?
I got Moon Knight, Doom, Professor X, I think.
I'm only missing like 4 or 5. I got most of them.
I'm a one variant per card kind of dude, though. Like, if I already have a really good variant that I'm like, I like playing this variant a lot, it's very hard to convince me to get another one, especially a $1,200 one of it.
Yeah. 100%.
The death was my favorite. And I have the mech death, which I actually really like that one. And I was like, it's going to be really hard for me to not play this card. And I saw this one.
$100
on it. Okay.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
Like, it's a literal tarot card of death. That's amazing. How do I not play that one? Yeah, yeah. I'm with you, Bing. So if I have a variant I already like, it's hard for me to just be like, yeah, I'm just not going to get that one. It's like a lateral move too much for me.
The other thing I'll say with these variants is that these are like the worst variants to split I've ever seen. All of them look so much better just at infinite. And everyone's like, oh, you should split it, try and get an inked. It's like, it's already inked, but cooler. Oh, you should split it, try and get a gold background. The background's already like has a really cool hint of gold that looks way stupider when it's just a flat gold background. I think that's for a lot of variants in the game too, where just not having anything in the background is great. The backgrounds they do are great.
But then I can't get my particle effects on crackle, with the basic background. That's what's killing me. I want like orbits, but the basic background.
So true.
Please.
That's what they need to change. Let me have a crackle effect with the normal background, please.
Thank you. Yeah.
Like, for example, is I'm sure this one. I love this Iron Man. I love any card that has pretty blue sky in the background. It's so great. And this would look amazing with like a blue or a red or gold crackle. But then I lose the best part of the art.
Rian Gonzalez, not the baby, the Spider-Man. Chibi Iron Man that they did actually did really good with the gold background because it would it wouldn't cover the that one. Yeah, it wouldn't cover the blue of the rocket, so all the rockets and like all like the swipes of the clouds were still blue. I think that sometimes they're getting better. Also, that evil Iron Man, I want the nullified Iron Man so bad. That card is
so bad,
ridiculous looking.
Oh man.
I want the nullified Captain America really badly. I'll show you guys that one real quick. There's so many variants that I'm just waiting for. That the Professor X Noir variant I was waiting for months when I first saw it. And when we finally got it, I was so excited. Where are you at?
Right. Boom. Conqueror.
It's beautiful.
Yep. Very good. Very good.
Do we have any closing thoughts in regards to the patch, all that good stuff?
Dude, between this OTA and this patch, it is a great time to be playing Marvel Snap. There is going to be a completely new meta growing. Everyone gets to be a part of it. Everyone gets to find their own cool little interactions. This is the coolest time ever to be a Marvel Snap player, and I'm so, so excited. Like, the biggest OTA ever and one of the biggest patch, probably, one of the biggest patches ever. One of the biggest patches and one of the biggest OTAs back-to-back. The meta is going to be completely different. No one knows what's going to be the best card. Super exciting time to experiment and have fun with Marvel Snap. And I'm so, so, so excited.
Ted, do you have any idea what's going
to
happen?
It's same for me, man. I can't wait to be able to be diving into the decks. And I'm just going to be torn in so many different directions playing Werewolf, playing all the changed cards. How many of them can I cram into one deck? Check out the stream to see where we go.
All right, and Binks, of course, if someone somehow went through all this and they have no idea who you are or where to find you, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm Binks Plays. I'm Binks, but you can call me Binks Plays. I do deck videos on YouTube where I do mostly off-meta decks, and I do all of my own builds. So I just cook up a deck, and then I build deck highlights for them on YouTube. So you can find me on YouTube, and then on Twitch, I actually dual stream. Dual stream is back on the menu, boys. So I actually dual stream on Twitch and YouTube, so you can find me both at Binks_Plays. But thank you so much, gentlemen, for having me on, dude. This is a great discussion.
Yeah.
It was awesome having you back, Binks.
Yeah, so we will definitely have you on it again at some point. We got to bring in as many different creators as we can. It's always fun to have these kind of discussions and provide different like feedback and stuff like that. But as always, we love you guys. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for enjoying these and being here every single week. And we hope you are here for the next one. So, bye-bye.
Don't stop snapping.
Can't Stop Snapping is a podcast hosted and produced by Brad Seffert and Teddy Ninja, originally created by Michael Thurman.